Good afternoon. For this presentation, John Norquist asked me to address the question, what does transportation mean to a developer? And the bottom line, it means opportunity to create enduring value and make money. So is that good enough? Should I continue? Or? I'm a collector of quotes, and I'll start with a few here. This one from Tolstoy. You can read it with me. Most men can seldom accept even the simplest and most obvious truth, but be such as would oblige them to admit the falsity of conclusions, which they have delighted in explaining to colleagues, which they have proudly taught to others, and which they have woven thread by thread into the fabric of their lives. You know, here he outlines the challenges, I think, to the development and transportation industry, and really to life. And those challenges are complacency, the status quo, and a lack of creativity. You know, most situations, in comes ideology and out goes common sense. And we need to move beyond our dogmas. So put on your imagination cap and let's go. Another quote, this one from Hannah Arendt, the philosopher. I want to say that I think the most important human-built component of the public realm is our streets. And here, Hannah Arendt talks about the public realm. What makes modern society so difficult to bear is not the number of people involved, but the fact that the world between them has lost its power to gather them together, to relate, and to separate them. What is it about the modern public realm that degrades our ability to gather together and relate to one another? I believe it is because of the vision that has been advanced, that was advanced during the first 50 years of the 20th century and was implemented during the second half of the 20th century. This vision has resulted in a dehumanization of the public realm for the sake of car movement. Now, where did this come from? In some of my readings, I came across this quote from the Communist Manifesto. Engels and Marx wrote down kind of a list, top 10 list of implementing communism, and number 8 on the list called for abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population of the countryside. So I read this, and a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, aha, sprawl is a communist plot. Now, the car is a wonderful tool of mobility. We all know that. You know, Henry Ford invented it, or didn't invent it, but really came to mass produce it. And it's really a wonderful tool of mobility. However, there are limits beyond which a productive technology turns counterproductive. You know, here he said we shall solve the city problem by leaving the city. Well, there are limits to that. Automobile infrastructure that is necessary to accommodate automobile movement has crowded out other forms of transportation like walking, bicycling, and trains. Long ago, the government passed legislation against monopolies in the manufacture and sale of cars. At the same time, however, it implemented urban design policies and constructed highways in a manner that created a kind of super monopoly for car transport. Ironically, this led us to become enslaved by the very technology that was intended to free us. Gradually, in this super-monopolistic condition, cars became increasingly unable to deliver on the freedom of movement they had promised us as their utility collapsed in the face of congestion, infrastructure cost, and pollution. Meanwhile, we get a kind of a twisted form of politics that offers to solve our automotive movement addiction with a vision to spend more money to feed that addiction with additional accommodation of automobile movement. Vicious circle. Now, technocrats of the early 20th century, like Corbeau, were totally fascinated by the car and sought to remake the public realm and its accommodation. As I said, the car is a wonderful tool. You know, I came up here this morning in a car with Rick Hall, and we drove up from Charleston on 26 and 77 and got here in 3 hours. You know, I would have preferred to have taken a high-speed train, but that wasn't available. So anyway, it's a good tool. So I'm not anti-car by any means. It just needs to be in its place. Again, limits to technology. Here's Corbeau's vision applied to my hometown of Atlanta. A very powerful vision, again, that was really distributed in the first half of the 20th century and implemented in the second half of the 20th century. And here we are in this mess. Most of you have seen this slide. I've got this from Walter Kulosh. It shows that the greatest efficiency of traffic speed is around 25 miles per hour. When you get above that on a two-lane road, you know the cars have to spread out further and further, so it gets less efficient. So the maximum capacity is at about 25 miles per hour. So that's how cities, you know, between cities, it's fine to move fast, but in cities, in towns, in the human habitation, it should be very slow. Here's a great quote that speaks to that. Mae West, anything worth doing is worth doing slowly. Creation of where you are and inform a direction for where you want to go, a vision. Without vision, Proverbs tells us, the people perish. Without vision, one often falls into reactionary mode, continuously responding to the same problems in the same ways. Rather than wait for a problem to solve, however, vision initiates a new course of action. It does work. It doesn't work to stave off defeat. It pursues something desirable in a manner that opens the way to success. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had one of the most succinct and profound statements about vision and leadership and even sales. And he said, if you want to move people, it has to be toward a vision that's positive for them, that taps important values, that gets them something they desire, and it has to be presented in a compelling way that people feel inspired to follow. This is one of the lessons of history that we've learned. Now, a few other lessons. We talked about connectivity. That's what this conference is about. This is the little town of Beaufort, South Carolina, where I learned a lot of these historical lessons. And I had a math game that I was going to play with you on this flip chart over here, but I don't see a marker, so come up afterward and we can play that game, but I'll just continue. But the importance of a network, to me, the greatest importance, it allows you to have narrow streets, very narrow streets, which are more human scale. And people have been talking about this for a long, long time, the importance of narrow streets. For example, Jesus. And his Sermon on the Mount, you know, right after he said the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. He says, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. So this is kind of a warning to transportation engineers. Don't lead us down the road to hell. You know, stop that. Another important lesson from Beaufort, this is little Craven Street. This was of great inspiration to me. These houses are about 150 years old. They sit on a very, very small lot. It's a tenth or a 20th of an acre lot. But it's a great example of an outdoor room. You know this analogy where the street, the pavement, and the grass and the sidewalk is the floor, and then the facades, the walls of the home, the facades of the homes are the walls of this room. And trees are planted to grow up and form a canopy. It's like the ceiling. It's a room. And what was interesting to me as a developer is, you know, even though these houses were very old and they had obsolete floor plans, they didn't have good closet space, and the plumbing was suspect, well, they still sold for a lot of money. And the reason is this public realm is so beautiful, and people are willing to pay for that. It's also simply a function of supply and demand. There's a... there's a very limited supply of these kind of environments, but a big demand, and so the price goes up, of course. So this was a good lesson that we used. You know, the American developer does, as we all know, does a wonderful job delivering a great private realm. The problem is this public realm. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood like this, a subdivision like this in Atlanta. The problem is that the public realm is just given over to the automobile, right? It's just not embellished. Like in the previous slide on Craven Street, it makes it a beautiful place. And developers have shot themselves in the foot because we have promoted exclusiveness and isolation, you know, and privacy. Every time you build a house, it takes away from what you're offering, right? It gets progressively less exclusive. And so people who move there first sometimes begin to resent the newcomers. And that's not socially sustainable. So if instead what you offered was neighborhood and a sense of inclusiveness and community, then theoretically every time a house gets built, it adds to what is offered and it gets better over time. And that's what we've discovered in the neighborhoods that we're building. This is New Point in Beaufort. This is our historic district. Houses date way back to 1993. And you can see it's not anything, you know, world class. Simple sidewalks, street trees. But the idea was to create a public realm that was so beautiful that people felt compelled to come out of their from behind the TV and the air conditioning or the computer and be in the public realm. They would enjoy that. And as they were doing so, they would just kind of casually come in contact with their other neighbors, and that helps form the bonds of community. Just a few quick shots of New Point, and you can see our transportation network there and how it's embellished to add value. The public realm adds value to the private realm. We guide the development of the private realm, so it adds value to the public realm. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and you create value, right? You create social value, I just talked about, aesthetic value, and you create economic value. So a few other shots of New Point, the little commercial area. Ion is kind of our flagship neighborhood in Mount Pleasant. Dover Cole and Associates and Duane Platter Zyberk helped us design this. It's 244 acres in Mount Pleasant, just over the bridge from downtown Charleston. So it's a large infill piece of property. There's a couple of shots from 1997 and then a couple of years ago. Happens very fast. The historic district in Ion. Here, these were the first three houses that were built in the neighborhood, and the one in the middle sold in 1998, actually this month, 10 years ago, for $160,000. Now, it resold about 3 years ago before the bottom started dropping out. It resold for $760,000. And so, again, this is the power of a limited supply of this, but a big demand. Now, one of the interesting things, though, about this house is, it sold for $160,000. The one on the left sold for over $300,000. It was a smaller house. You know, you tell developers that, and they like shake their head. There's no way you can mix product price points like that. But what's happening here? These are all single family. But what's happening here is that there's the house in the middle. It's just your bread and butter house. The one on the left has a copper roof and nice finishes and whatnot. But they both address the street and they both share this beautiful public realm. And so people forget about how big a house is or what the roof is made of or whatever. They buy this public realm. So it's a great way to mix it up. And just a few other shots of the public realm in Ion. A little commercial area. Some of the civic buildings, this is a charter school on the left, a charter Montessori school, 180 students, and a school built on a third of an acre. This is the first church in Ion, an Eastern Orthodox church. This is a little redevelopment project we've been working on in downtown Charleston. The first phase is pictured here. We actually worked with the city to neck down some of the adjacent streets and calm the traffic. They're willing to work with us on that. And so it's a more urban, dense development, affordable housing component. Some photographs of that. And then for our latest project, Andres talked this morning about how some people are kind of going medieval. You know, that's what we're doing. We're taking lessons from Europe, some of these cities that have been around for 1,000 and 2,000 years. And, you know, to me, if something's been around for 1,000 and 2,000 years and people still like living there and visiting there and working there, that's sustainable to me. That's sustainability. So we're taking those lessons. And for Mixon, which is a little redevelopment project in North Charleston, South Carolina, just above Charleston, these are some of the first homes that our first neighbor started moving in a few weeks ago. This photograph at the top is interesting. See this arch right here? This is actually a public street going under a building. That's what we were enabled to do. I don't know of anywhere else in America that is enabling that, but the city of North Charleston allowed us to do that. You can do developments on a greenfield piece of property or even in a one or two block area of a downtown or a redevelopment of a large area in North Charleston like Mixon, how do you retrofit an existing arterial? Well, this is U.S. 17 as it goes through Mount Pleasant. You see Charleston on the left, the Cooper River, and then Mount Pleasant is basically a town that's sprawled out over a 15-mile linear strip. And one section, this section pictured here, Johnny Dodds Boulevard, actually from the Cooper River Bridge to 526, was planned to have a series of flyovers. The mayor of Mount Pleasant wanted to turn it into a kind of an interstate and have these flyover roads all the way through. This is just going to show you. Here is Ion is actually up here, and so we didn't really like that vision of an interstate through our section of town. So we organized a group of business and civic leaders, and we founded an organization called the East Cooper Planning Council. Doesn't that sound really official and important? And our thought was we wanted to provide some leadership and vision on growth-related issues in Mount Pleasant. And since Johnny Dodds Boulevard, this idea of turning into an interstate was the alligator closest to the canoe, we attacked that first. So the new bridge, the new Cooper River Bridge, was in the middle of construction. So, you know, we were in a hurry. Here's the existing condition at the top and what was imagined on the bottom. That's what they wanted to do, just put this kind of freeway through the middle of town. So we had a different idea, and one of which was the multi-way boulevard that's been talked about. The boulevard book had been recently published, and we had been inspired by the boulevards in Europe and in other places, even Ocean Parkway and Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn. And we gathered up a group of our local engineers and planners, and we came up with this design to redesign Johnny Dodds Boulevard into this multi-way boulevard. And we actually made a little kind of a homespun video, and you can see it. I don't have the link to it here, but if you go to YouTube and look up Johnny Dodds Boulevard, J-O-H-N-N-I-E, Dodds Boulevard, you can find that. If you can't, just contact me and I'll send you the link. But it offered a little homespun video that showed kind of the alternatives, what you could do, one or the other. And this inspired this grassroots effort. It was really kind of a situation. I mean, we were behind the eight ball. The town had proposed this. The mayor had proposed the freeway through the town, and we had to catch up. So it was like a situation where you had to create a situation where the people lead and the leaders are forced to follow. So that's what we did, and we inspired. We got all the people, business owners, and residents on either side of Johnny Dodds Boulevard who didn't want to be, you know, disenfranchised for the sake of someone being able to get through that corridor, you know, 2 minutes faster or whatever. So we came up with this new plan. Ultimately, that grassroots effort led to the town shifting its attitude, and we were able, through the help of a lot of the commercial businesses along the road, to hire Dover Cole and Partners and Hall Planning and Engineering, and importantly, an urban economist, Don Zucchelli, to come in and study. He studied the kind of cost-benefit aspects of this road. So we had some goals in mind. We knew we needed a balanced approach. We needed to accommodate the traffic that moved through to the outlying areas of Mount Pleasant, but also we wanted to make the local area better, provide alternative modes of travel, one that wasn't just about the car, but about transit, pedestrians, bikes, that was safe, that helped us redevelop from what was kind of a aging, tired strip mall area to more of an urban development pattern, and that became effective and had minimal impacts. So we came up with this boulevard plan. The existing conditions was the roads on either side were somewhat disconnected, and with the boulevard, we wanted to link up those street sections that were there and provide more of a network, so that we ended up with ultimately a beautiful plan. Some renderings from that site. This is one of the with a boulevard you have the fast lanes in the middle and the slower lanes on the outside. So this is one of those two lanes of fast-moving traffic in one direction and two lanes in the other. that would eventually accommodate transit. And then the roads on the side could be gradually grow to fill in and redevelop these aging strip malls into something more urban, have a lovely pedestrian environment. We were proposing to do multi-lane roundabouts to facilitate traffic movement through there. The town, we couldn't get them to buy into that. So we have traffic lights at the major intersections. How am I doing, Scott? Are we okay? So I'll go through this. This was a modern roundabout in Clearwater. I'm just going to, for the sake of time, I'm going to skip through. But the economics, as I said, was very important. It turned out that after running all the numbers, that the cost were dramatically less than they would be if you did the interstate type program through the middle of town. And it created a great sense of place. So I'll just leave you with a couple slides. Sorry, John, I ripped this off from you, but you got to decide. You got to make a choice, right? You got to make a choice. Is it going to be rock or jelly donut? You know, is it going to be the end of Western civilization as we know it or nirvana? You got to make it clear to people. And just a slide from South Carolina. This is two sides of the State House, the Capitol building in South Carolina. And you can see that one side has been retrofitted to be a beautiful public realm, a place where people want to be. Hopefully we'll eventually get to the other side. But I just end on this to show you what is possible. So thank you very much.